UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Patients with chronic known or unknown interstitial lung disease may present with severe respiratory flares that require intensive management. My guest today is Dr. Vincent Valentine. He's a professor in the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Critical Care Medicine and the Medical Director of Lung Transplantation at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Valentine. Explain a little bit about acute respiratory distress syndrome, what that is.
Acute respiratory distress syndrome is a constellation of many problems stemming from underlying lung injury or new lung injury from some antecedent event, frequently some infectious event such as a viral trigger, bacterial trigger, and some unidentified triggers. We also can see this when we are dealing with patients that need rapid resuscitation, particularly with transfusion. So it's really a constellation of lung problems that occur quite rapidly within a day or so. Somebody may be well a few days ago, and all of a sudden, after a few sniffles, may become profoundly short of breath and have difficulty getting enough oxygen in or ventilating off their carbon dioxide.
And as a group of disorders, what are some of the complications and further complications of interstitial lung disease?
Well, interstitial lung disease goes into another category, but sticking with the acute respiratory distress syndrome at first, most of these patients really cannot breathe on their own and get proper gas exchange without some sort of external source, particularly mechanical ventilation. Interstitial lung disease is different in this category because it's a whole spectrum of nearly 200 different diagnoses, or more than 200 different diagnoses. And amongst those who present acutely may present de novo, in other words, haven't had a problem before where they developed acute respiratory distress syndrome, or they may have had another lung condition, such as an interstitial lung disease, where that the lung can be triggered into acute respiratory distress syndrome. And again, nearly all these patients need some sort of external support, such as mechanical ventilation.
How important is the early diagnosis as being crucial to improve outcome prediction?
I don't think we know the answer to that question. However, we believe if we see patients earlier with progressive lung dysfunction, now again, we would be moving from acute to less acute in one category. So let's move to that first. If we can recognize patients who are progressively getting tired and short of breath earlier and get an accurate diagnosis, we may know a better means of intervening. As far as the acute respiratory distress syndrome, and I guess the example is the H1N1 flu epidemic back in 2009 that struck the world pretty good. Many of these patients presented in respiratory distress, got intubated, sedated, mechanically ventilated, and then when the original primary care docs or critical care docs in outlying hospitals were trying to manage these patients, then they started calling to refer them on to larger centers. Sometimes it was a little late, and many times the influenza wasn't identified earlier on. One argument is to get them referred earlier to a large center for more aggressive means and more talented measures of management, even all the way towards the extracorporeal membrane oxygenation known as ECMO, which basically brought to life the use of this external life support in the forms of ECMO in this type of epidemic. Earlier recognition to get them referred on to larger centers that have more experience in managing these patients to prevent the complications of managing these patients in the ICU. But again, there's a separate category in there because there are patients with a variety of interstitial lung disease that can have their condition exacerbated where they would present. And again, earlier referral would be better for these patients.
And what are some of the valuable diagnostic tools that you use to aid in this diagnosis?
There's a variety of serologic tests. because there are a variety of connective tissue diseases that can affect the lungs, either de novo acutely, or they can indirectly affect the lungs subacutely, less striking in terms of time frame. We are comfortable, once we have these patients, whether they're intubated or not, is to do a procedure called the bronchoscopy, where we can put the patients under a little sedation, or if they get intubated, we can just go through the endotracheal tube and sample the lungs and their airway secretions to rule out infection. We do what's called a bronchoalveolar lavage. Sometimes we'll do a lung biopsy, a transbronchial biopsy, but not uncommonly that these patients will go on to a videocystic thoracoscopic biopsy to rule out infectious etiologies, to identify patterns of lung injury, and to determine precisely the underlying pathology that will direct, that could and will direct our care.
Does sometimes on a chest X-ray acute respiratory distress look like heart failure? Can those be confused?
Invariably they can, particularly in the age group. The older the patient, the more likely they're going to have comorbidities, and recognizing among the most common reasons why patients get admitted to the hospital with sudden shortness of breath, they could have pulmonary edema, fluid overload, and congestive heart failure. I think we're all familiar with nearly a quarter to a third of hospital admissions are related to some sort of cardiac dysfunction. So we can be fooled sometimes thinking that somebody may have this acute respiratory distress syndrome when in actuality it was just garden variety heart failure. But at the same time, people, physicians treating heart failure may not recognize that they may be dealing with somebody with the acute respiratory distress syndrome, and sometimes we see both. So it is very important that we do the proper assessments, and that would include an echocardiogram. The brain natriuretic peptide can be measured. Sometimes we have to get consultants such as cardiologists or even our advanced heart failure services to rule out significant cardiac dysfunction. And once we know the heart conditions eliminated, then we're focusing more on the acute respiratory distress syndrome, either infectious etiology or not.
So assess for us the appropriateness of specific treatments that you would use once you detect what's going on.
Again, it depends on the actual diagnosis. So acute respiratory distress syndrome in general, where patients require intubation and mechanical ventilation, they need to be oxygenated, and they need positive end expiratory pressure, PEEP, to recruit areas of their lungs that get de-recruited. If you think in terms of acute respiratory distress syndrome as affecting surfactant, they have a problem with functional surfactant, which causes the air sacs to collapse on themselves, and we need to recruit these air sacs for gas exchange to optimize oxygenation and ventilation in these patients. And really, it becomes supportive care there with the mechanical ventilator, where we have to minimize complications and optimize their gas exchange. In some instances, we may not be able to deliver as much pressure in these patients because it could be complicated by causing barotrauma, and we may have to resort to the external corporeal membrane oxygenating machine, or ECMO, which would be the final stage of therapy in selected institutions.
What are some factors associated with hospital mortality?
Well, first of all, comorbidities. Patients who have multiple medical problems is going to affect their mortality. Age affects their mortality. Delay in recognizing that we're dealing with the acute respiratory distress syndrome, and then improper management with positive pressure ventilation, thus the move towards using ECMO in some of these patients.
So wrap it up for us, Dr. Valentine, what you want other physicians to know about acute respiratory distress syndrome and what they should truly be aware of.
It is a deadly condition. There are reported mortality rates can vary from as low as 20% in the younger population to nearly 50% in older and comorbid conditions. You want to recognize this, get these patients referred to larger centers that have more familiar with managing these patients, especially centers that have ECMO to help support them and all the resources to help these patients recover and improve over time. That would be the main thing.
And in just the last few minutes, how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine?
They can use the MIST line. I think it's 1-800-UAB-MIST. Secondly, they can actually try to call my office area, 205-934-5548, or even try to email me, vvalentine@uabmc.edu. There are a variety of ECMO specialists on call and pulmonologists are on call that can be contacted for the pulmonary attending on call or the ECMO attending on call for referral.
And tell us about your team. Why is UAB so great to work with?
Well, one, we have a dedicated group of experts and a team of advanced pulmonologists, and especially we have ECMO support. At UAB, we've done over 300 ECMOs. We've performed ECMO in over 300 patients in the last 5 years, and we're competent in this, and we are unique in that we get these patients on ECMO and we get them ambulatory. Another key to success is getting these patients out of the bed and moving around instead of laying up in the bed waiting for the lungs to heal.
Thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.